This is Open Run.
Not bad.
Nailed it. Love it.
All right, welcome back to Open Run, your favorite NBA podcast, your favorite NBA podcast's favorite NBA podcast. I'm your host, Stefan Merrill-Achakis, and today it is just me, myself, and I. That's right, I'm your only host, as my partner in crime, Jesse Williams, is directing, not just acting, but also directing episodes of the hit television show Grey's Anatomy, of which he is a star. Yes, you know him, we love him. Jesse Williams, very proud of him. Moving up in the world, sitting in that director's chair. He owes it all to me. But that said, it is time to talk NBA. It's time to think aloud about NBA, to ruminate alone about the drama of this basketball season. Now, as you may or may not know, I'm a Knicks fan. You know this. And they are in the doldrums. They're at the bottom of the barrel, but not low enough. We need them to get to the very bottom. We need the tank to be fully equipped to go south. And right now, today, I will be going to my second Knicks game of the week. That's right. I saw them lose to the lowly Mavs on Tuesday. I'm hoping to see them lose to the not-so-lowly Philadelphia 76ers tonight. Two processes passing in the night. Processes? Jury's out. But that's what it'll be. The future, the shape of process to come is what the Knicks should be thinking when they play the Sixers tonight. Will owner James Dolan be in attendance? Well, it's hard to say. The other night I was sitting just a few rows behind him. His seats were occupied, but not by him. Rather, by four young ladies who seemed to be enjoying the game quite thoroughly. The ball actually kept getting knocked to one of them, who then would proceed to spin it on her finger, Harlem Globetrotter style. I was very impressed. What impressed me even more was the fact that the ref let her hang on to the ball while she Instagrammed photos of her holding the ball, flexing on the sidelines. Granted, the game did go into a TV timeout, but I mean, that's some real New York shit. You look good on the sidelines, you get to hang on to the basketball. That's pretty solid. Pretty solid move by the ref there. Long game. Anyway, that was where the only action was to be seen. The Knicks got it handed to them by, yes, the Dallas Mavericks, a team whose biggest star is older than me. Bless his heart. Long live Dirk Nowitzki. If you haven't seen the documentary about Dirk, it is so very, very good. You have to see it. It's about his relationship with Holgar, his coach, Holgar Geschwindner, and I'll just tell you, it involves jazz.
A lot of that comes from Holger's imagination. He thinks outside the box. That's the way he played. And that's the connection that I see between that and jazz. If you are thinking in the box, it can still be jazz, but it doesn't have that creative little ting to it that you get when you find guys that are trying new things and always a little putting a little spice on it, if that makes any sense.
Live jazz musicians at practice. It involves journeys of the soul through Hobbit-esque scenarios. I'm telling you, it's called The Perfect Shot. It's on Netflix. It was. It should still be. There's your free plug, Perfect Shot. So you should check that out. But yeah, and then Harry Barnes was looking good. Harry Barnes, the only player in the league whose name sounds like he's a private detective. He was showing up. And who else was looking good? Dennis Smith Jr. didn't look bad. My friend and I went to this game thinking it would be, you know, the Frankie Smokes revenge game. After all that drama where, you know, King James himself was talking about how the Knicks would have been, you know, would have done themselves well to draft Dennis Smith. And then the press took it as a knock against Frank. It wasn't meant that way, but still, the drama ensued on the court. There's pushing, there's shoving. Ennis the Menace was all up in King James's face. It was a whole thing. So Knicks fans grasping for storylines as we are, we were looking at this as a revenge game. It didn't really play out that way, but Frank looked pretty good. He didn't start. Moutier got the nod. But Frank has 5 more months almost of being 19 years old. People need to slow their roll on casting big judgments. This This low attention span, quick to judge world we're living in, doesn't really leave a lot of room for growing up in public. But I have hope. I have faith in Frank Neely Kina. I'm ready. We wanted someone who was long. We wanted someone who could play D. Voila, we got him in the form of the young Frenchman, Belgium-born. Time will tell. And in the meantime, tonight I'll be going back to MSG, the world's most famous arena, to see the Knicks take on the Philadelphia 76ers. And that is when we will see just how committed to tanking the Knicks remain. Two home losses in a week can be tough, but ooh, it's worth it. With the NCAA tournament just kicking into high gear, kicking into first gear, really, the players are going to be showcasing their talents, tantalizing NBA front offices around the league, especially those playing down at the bottom of the well, playing in the shallow end of the pool, who are in the middle of positioning themselves, if they play their cards right, to draft an elite prospect who could potentially lead the franchise to the promised land. The Knicks right now are slated probably 8th or 9th, but that's if you go with just realism and no optimism. I'm an optimist. I'm looking for a frozen envelope. Maybe the Knicks go up a couple, but even at 8 or 9, they're getting Trae Young, who is kind of yesterday's point guard du jour, or they're getting today's point guard flavor du jour, Colin Sexton. So those guys are right now slated at 8 or 9. We'll see. People's boards always get affected a little too much by the NCAA tournament. A few good games in a row on a big stage, and everybody's ready to sign you up. But obviously, that's not how it works. A lot of guys go top 10 who do not become top 10 pick-esque talents in the league. It's a really strange non-science. Everyone loves to prognosticate and pick, and it's all a crapshoot. Beyond the first couple, and even with the first couple, anyone who claims to know is just trying to bolster their ratings. And here at Open Run, we only tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So Sexton seems dynamic, explosive. I like that. If you got Frankie and Sexton as the team of the future, the backcourt duo of the future, I would not be complaining. How tall is Colin Sexton, you ask? That's interesting. 6'3". So not huge, but not tiny. Trae Young is 6'2". And then your man Frankie is what, 6'5"? Yeah, so I've got my eyes on him right now because my inside scouts are telling me that Sexton's the guy. But TBD, I'm ignorant. Let's be real. Just like everyone else in the world, I don't know who they should pick. But I do know that it would behoove us to lose again. So I'm going through that emotional conflict of rooting for the Knicks long term, but short term wanting them to lose. The way I dealt with this at the Mavericks game was whenever the game was a little bit close and I would end up wanting the Mavs to start thriving, I looked away from the game and started talking with my friend Steve, who brought me, catching up about, you know, life and work and getting party planning advice, talking about how surprisingly good the burgers were, all real stuff we had to talk about, but also just I wanted to kind of ease up my degree of focus on the game because it's a pain. It's a pretty pain, to quote my man Money Mark. If it yields the right result, but it is painful. So I don't really want to monitor the tank that closely. It's almost like, talk about monitor the tank. My vibe watching the tank is a little bit like my vibe watching the gas tank after the light goes off. I think it's jinxy to keep staring at it. You basically have to just ride it out till you hit the next exit where there is a gas station. And when that next exit comes, you take it, fine. But if you stare at the tank and you stare at the gas light, you're just jinxing yourself. So tonight I'll get to see the process in person. Joel Embiid, that is. And I'll get to see the process. That is the Sixers, and see how their process is unfolded. And I'll see how that process and the play of the process informs the process of the Knicks. And all of that together will be a process that I'm mentally preparing myself for now by talking to you. Can you tell I'm nervous? Even though I'm sure it's just going to be another big loss. I'm nervous about how I'm going to comport myself. Anyhow, more important to the state of the league is the state of the Golden State Warriors backcourt. Now, Klay Thompson's out with a thumb. They got Curry out with an ankle. It's unclear when they'll be able to get splashing around in the water there in the deep end where the Warriors like to play. The Rockets are still thriving. Last time we talked, they were 32-1 when Capella, Harden, and Chris Paul are all on the court. And so if the Golden State backcourt stays hurt, then the Rockets really do have a chance to get there. And I do want to say that my friend Tom Russell, who we've talked about on the podcast before, will be vindicated, will be validated with his early season chatter about the fact that maybe this year, for the first time in a few, it's not just a foregone conclusion, Cavs-Warriors. Now we're looking at Raptors-Rockets. Is that what's going to happen? Will LeBron really be thwarted in the East? Will that affect where he goes? I do not know. But you have to think it affects it at least a little bit. If his consecutive finals run gets interrupted by, you know, a strange stew in Cleveland, where you did a wholesale redo of the team and it's still not good enough to make the finals, we'll see. The thing that I don't know is where he should go. I'm not saying this just as a Knicks fan, but the narrative is strong with New York because you get to bring a franchise that's been really down low and try to bring them their first chip in like half a century. But the reality of that happening is, I mean, so slim, and I don't really see what... I understand that the draw just isn't as strong as a place like Philly. So you go to a place like Philly, that's one version of potential ring-chasing accusations, same as they would say in Houston. But the media and the fan base putting so much of an emphasis on rings makes ring chasing a sensible move if he's thinking about legacy. So Houston and Philly, you can get knocked for rings. LA, I guess, what's the knock? If you go to LA, that you're prioritizing a business and post-playing career life? I can't imagine that would actually drive his decision now. He also is planning to play for like 7 more years, if not more. And now an emerging narrative that I really like is that he wants to play in the league long enough that he could see his son become a pro, and then they could play against each other or, dare I say, with each other. When he was on Open Run back in the day, he was listing off his favorite athletes. One of them, he mentioned Neon Deion. He also mentioned Ken Griffey Jr. And Griffey Jr. got to play in the league with Griffey Sr., and I think that's a model that LeBron would love to emulate. But listen, it's just me here, so I'm not going to take too much time bloviating about where LeBron may land because it's all reading tea leaves at this point. I do want to do a special all-Stephon edition of Shame or Fame. And this would relate to a quote that just came out from Isaiah Thomas, and it's about his current standing in the league. You know, obviously the narrative with Isaiah Thomas, current backup point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers, is that he's not, you know, exactly that. He's coming off the bench now after having what some were seeing as a borderline MVP campaign. He's now a sixth man. Well, not according to him. Isaiah Thomas, in an interview with friend of the show Sam Amick over at USA Today, said, quote, "I'm not no sixth man, and I won't be a sixth man, parentheses, in the future. I just want everybody to know that, like, clear as can be. I'm a two-time All-Star and a starter who has done things that a lot of people in this league haven't done when given that opportunity." And he goes on to say, "But I got traded into a situation I can't control. There's nothing bad against Luke Walton. There's nothing bad against the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm taking advantage of the opportunity they've given me, and then we'll end the season off strong." And as Sam Amick writes, Thomas has done that of late, averaging 18.4 points and 5.8 assists since February 23rd while helping the Lakers win 8 of their past 11 games. "I'm here to help," Thomas said. "I'm here to continue to get better. I can reach levels that I know I haven't reached yet, and I'm here to help along the way in whatever they need me to do, and I'm going to be a professional." So I have no problem with this line of thinking, and I certainly have no problem with speaking a better or preferred outcome into being. My only thing with this that lands in on the shame side of things is the talking is what really hurt his standing in Cleveland, it seemed like, from the outside. Well, in the least, it didn't help. So this is the sort of thing where it feels like if his play is already beginning to do the talking for him, why not just let it continue to do so? That's where I would land. I understand the idea of wanting to be outspoken. You're in LA. It's also a media-heavy culture. If you don't have the conversation, someone else will have it for you. At the same time, I do not see the plus here. I obviously know there are there GMs who really think he's stoked to be a sixth man and he needs to clear the air on that. I doubt it. I really doubt it. It'll be an interesting free agency case study where Isaiah Thomas lands and why this offseason. But I don't think he's in the position to be controlling the narrative in the way he wants to when he makes comments like this. Maybe Sam Amick would say differently, but that's the way it strikes me. So, that's shame. Shame. Which is a shame because I'm rooting for the guy. Anybody who's an underdog, I'm rooting for. And when you're 5'9 in the NBA, you are an underdog. So this isn't a big tisk tisk shame on you. It's just more like maybe the vibe now for him in LA is to just put one foot in front of the other and just sun people on the basketball court and let your actions speak for themselves. But, you know, doing this alone is really making me kind of think about the nature of things. Who am I? What is basketball even? And I'm guessing that these are things that Markelle Fultz and maybe by extension Kawhi Leonard are also thinking at this very moment. Who am I? It makes me think of that Cat Williams bit about the tiger in the zoo in San Francisco, where the guy jumped into the tiger cage and ended up getting eaten. And everybody's mad at the tiger, but Cat Williams is like, the only real factor in this equation is the tiger. The tiger's just being a tiger. And after months, years of never hunting, just having meat thrown to him, he starts to question, am I even a tiger?
And the tiger be fucked up because he don't know what to feel. And after a while, he get depressed and down and start acting like us. You know how we get depressed and start doubting shit that we shouldn't even doubt. I bet the tigers had got as low as they could possibly get. Just, are you sure I'm a tiger? I don't feel very much like a tiger. Maybe I'm just a vicious-ass koala bear. Did you ever investigate that?
So, yeah, as I sit here doing a one-man show, thinking about what kind of tiger I am, I imagine that's probably what the inner monologue of one Markelle Fultz might be when he's getting clowned for his shot form, or even Kawhi right now when he's been cleared by the Spurs doctors, but not by his own, or not by the third opinion, or whatever might be going on over there. So, just to wrap up the Deep Thoughts episode of Open Run, the soulful basketball walkabout with yours truly, I just want to say, so many times, it happens too fast. You trade your passion for glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. That's right. Parting words from Open Run and my boys in Survivor. Till next week, just remember, it's about the thrill of the fight. Unless you're tanking. Stefan Marilichak is signing off.
For more Open Run, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or visit openrunshow.com. And if you like being in the loop, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Open Run.